Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. What's happening with this weather? We got to get a little colder. That's going to be nice. That's good. Don't dread that. We're going to need it. We're going to need every drop, every degree we can get below 32 degrees, we're going to need now. Now, if it gets down to 20, we might have to worry. But we're going to need those temperatures to drop if we're going to salvage the benefits of this winter. And winter has many benefits. We can talk about that. If you experienced some issues in your yard this past week because of the cool temperatures, the colder temperatures, some of you probably got down below freezing. And some plants might have looked like it briefly. I'm sure they recovered, except for perhaps your tomatoes. But, you know, that's okay. But most of the winter vegetables should have done just fine. Your camellias and azaleas, all that was fine. We got some temperatures coming up this week that'll be just fine. Just fine. Could be a little colder, but they're going to be okay. They're going to help us build up some of our cool hours, the cool hours that we need to make things grow in spring. We can talk about why that happens. But there's something else going on this week that I just, you know, it's my job to remind you of this. So you'll forgive me if I do it again, but if I don't, I have just missed one of the primary chores, objectives, charges that I have when talking to you each Sunday morning, and that is to remind you it's time. It's time. It's time to start your spring garden. Yeah, I know. I know. You, it's still winter. You're still reading what people in Minnesota do, but no, that's not how it works. Not how it works. What we need to do is understand where we are. Understand that spring on the Gulf Coast is going to be happening very soon. And just as importantly, summer on the Gulf Coast is going to be happening very soon. So we've got to take advantage of spring when it starts. On the Gulf Coast, it starts February 15th. We'll talk about what that means. Talk about what spring means. It doesn't mean that all the frosts are over, but it means that spring has started, and we got to be ready for it. We got to be ready for it. Because if we're not ready for spring, summer is going to eat us alive. That's the way it is. Just a word of warning. Now, here's the good part. You're listening. And you're going to let me harangue you here for the next few minutes about what it is that you need to be doing in the garden right now. Get your planting done, just broadly speaking. Getting your shrubs and trees planted as soon as possible is the thing to do. Now, citrus, I don't want to make a big deal out of it. Citrus over there in one corner, don't worry about your citrus. Wait on those. They don't need to be planted now. You don't need to buy citrus now. It's not the time. But virtually everything else in your garden, you need to start planting it now. Get it planted. The shrubs, the trees. This is your last good chance. Because as February dawns and as March comes on, you're going to have problems with moisture. You're going to have problems with adaptation. You're going to have problems. So you want to get as much of that planting done now, in January, yes, in January, as you possibly can. You don't want to do it if the ground's too wet. You don't want to do it in the middle of a storm. But you want to find some days when you can get your shrubs and trees planted. You want to get most of your flowers planted, too. Now, if they're annuals and they don't survive cold temperatures, well, no. But you know what? If you can find snapdragons now, if you can find violas now, it's a great time to plant them. Great time to plant them. You'll actually get some bloom out of them before it gets too hot for summer. Great things to do. You know, I eat out of my garden. I don't know if you want to do that, but I spend a lot of, most of what I eat, with the exception of, say, grains, comes out of my garden. I'm trying to fix the grain thing. I'll figure it out one day. But most of what I eat comes out of the garden, including things like eggs. So it's a really important thing to begin preparing now. If you really want to eat out of your garden, this is the week that we start thinking about tomatoes on the Gulf Coast. You got to get them started now. You got to get your peppers started now. Truth is, you would have done better to have started them last week, but you still got time. We all got busy. Goodness gracious, I got busy. During those 12 days of Christmas, we always do, but it's a good reminder. Coming out of it, you remember, oh gosh, I didn't do it. Now's the time. It's time to start tomatoes inside on the windowsill. We can talk about how to do that. I'll help you through it. It's time to start peppers. Particularly, it's time to start peppers. Really excellent time to start peppers, particularly those really productive peppers that we talk about all the time, the Caribbean peppers, the South American peppers, the habaneros, the ajis, the sweet habaneros that have no heat, the habaneros that have extreme heat, the ajis that are just incredibly delicious and rich, and some have no heat and some do. All this got to be started now. You need to start them now. You know what else you need to do right now? Things that go into the garden, directly into the garden for spring: carrots, peas, sugar snap peas. Better start planting them now. Now's the time. We'll talk about how to do that. It's probably too. It's not too late to plant some turnips. We got to talk about how to do that. Got to talk a little bit about how to do that. It's not too late to plant collards. You'll get a shorter season out of them. Not too late to plant broccoli. We can talk about what kind of broccolis. But it's really important for things like sugar snaps. If you want fava beans, plant your fava beans now. Ooh, I could talk about fava beans the whole show. They're interesting. They're fascinating. You need to plant them now. Now is the time. So give me a call this morning. Let's figure that out. Let's figure out how to make it this all work in your yard. You know, I think it is doable, and I can't take you through the whole year because it'll boggle your mind. I'm afraid it will boggle my mind trying to take you through a whole year of vegetables, though it's something we take a piece at a time. You can do it. You can provide. In most yards, you can provide most of the food you eat during the year. We can talk about how to do that. But you got to do it at the right time. You got to do it at the right time. And now's the time we harvest stuff out of the garden. I hope your broccoli's doing well. This is the time to be harvesting broccoli. It's the time to be harvesting cabbages. It's the time to be harvesting collards and turnips and radishes. All those wonderful things. Chard, kohlrabi. But soon we're going to need to anticipate what we're going to be harvesting in spring. And that means we got to plant now. So give me a call this morning. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about your yard. Let's talk about how to make it work for you, and how to understand what's happening in your yard and doing everything at the right time. That's what this show's about. So give us a call. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. I remind you, you can also text me. You can text me with questions. And you can also send me pictures via text. Same number, 251-343-0106.
Along about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-riding that Tennessee stud. I had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw, and one of her brothers was a bad outlaw. I sent her a letter by my Uncle Foot, then I rode away on the Tennessee stud. The Tennessee stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood, and there never was a horse like the Tennessee stud.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
So here we go. You know, I think it's cranking up. I think people know it's cranking up. The light is increasing. That makes people want to think about it. Even if the temperatures don't, those increasing length of day, your plants are going to respond. You know what I got? You know what I got this past week? An egg. One egg! But it's an egg! And that's kind of the first sign that the chickens know. Days are getting longer. Spring's on its way. I'm just trying to get you heated up, because if you don't get heated up, you're going to miss it. February 15th, it's the day. Somebody sent me a text asking me about mowing their yard. You know, one of the things we have to do in spring, you hate to have to think about it too much in winter. Here's the thing. Let me just say, you do want to mow your yard at 4 inches high. If it's St. Augustine during the summer, I don't know that it helps to mow it lower in winter. Don't know that it helps at all. Probably doesn't, honestly. Probably doesn't help at all. I would just mow it at the normal height. But if you're obsessive about mowing, you can certainly mow it lower in winter without damaging the St. Augustine the way you would in summer. The winter weeds that you're going to be getting in now, they ain't hurting your St. Augustine. You can not like them. Just mow them down. It ain't going to hurt anything. Because those winter weeds aren't competing with the St. Augustine. If anything, they're actually helping the St. Augustine by penetrating the soil, by turning nutrients over in the soil, by helping to undo some of the screwy things we do with fertilizers and other things. Those winter weeds, not a problem. If you don't like the look of them, if you don't like to see the flowers, if you don't have chickens who can eat them, well, just mow them. But don't mow it. There's no need to mow it lower if it's St. Augustine. Centipede, there's probably a small advantage in mowing lower to start the season. Don't have to do it now. No need to start now. You can do it later. But, you know, centipede, never going to be perfect, but you can start lower with centipede. But don't think it's a huge advantage for St. Augustine to mow low this time of year. It's not. Not going to make any difference to benefit the St. Augustine. I think you can do it with less harm this time of year. But in general, just don't worry about it. And I don't say don't worry about the winter weeds. If they bother you, mow them down. But just mow them down at 4 inches. They'll be fine. That's fine. That's my thoughts. Give me a call if you have more questions about that. If you have questions about centipede means that every answer is complicated. Because, I'm sorry. For the most part, in South Alabama, centipede is one sorry grass. I just don't have any other terms for it. It just is. And, you know, I think I ought to do a whole show on grass, but then, gosh, it would be a whole show on grass. Mm. Boy, what a thought. Listen, we need to talk about alternatives to lawn grass. I love talking about grass. Boy, let's talk about broom sedge. But when it comes to lawn grass, let's talk about bamboo. That's incredible grass. But when it comes to lawn grass, we kind of have very few choices because we've left ourselves very few choices because we're so, well, as my grandmother would say, and goodness knows exactly what this word means, but she knew what it means, and I have a sense of what it means. It's because we're so tukey. We're tukey. And so we only have a couple of three kinds of grasses. But, you know, there's alternatives to that. We ought to do a show on that at some point. But back to the question. Don't worry about mowing your St. Augustine grass low now. No benefits. No benefits at all that I can imagine. Don't worry about it. We got a couple callers. This is good to hear. John, I'm listening. What's going on?
Hey, with the warm weather we've had, we've got some blooms on our blueberries. I was just wondering the effects it's going to have this summer with the blueberries for harvesting.
Yeah, it definitely will have a negative effect. You know, if it's going to be great if you get a few blooms out of season. Blueberries, particularly if they're healthy, are, even if they're not healthy, they do tend to overproduce. And that can be a stress on a lot of blueberry varieties. So if you lose a few blooms, that's okay. And this cold weather should shut them down. And let's hope it keeps them shut down. So you're going to lose a few berries, but that's okay. Because blueberries tend to overproduce. How many? It's just a few sporadic blooms, not a lot of blooms?
No, I got a good bit. Probably about a 30, 40 on each.
Yeah, well, that's small number. The bigger, yeah. Let's and you'll have you should if they're big blueberries, you should have hundreds on each one. So that's still a small percentage. You know, we don't want those buds to continue to open though, and this cold may cause some retreat in those buds, and it may prevent more of them from opening up. Here's an interesting thing to do. So let's talk about this for just a minute. It hasn't been cold enough to keep things dampened down. And we really don't want those blueberries blooming until late February at the earliest and into March. So what do we do about it? That's a tricky question, but one thing you got to understand is that the ground has lots of heat in it, and the ground is always collecting heat and releasing heat. There is one small thing you can do to stop that from happening and keep your blueberries a little bit cooler, and that is to mulch heavily. So I would say at this point the best thing you can do for those blueberries is to put a heavy mulch of leaves around them, around the base, so that the roots don't warm up too quickly, and so that the top doesn't warm up too quickly either, so that the twigs don't warm up. That's the thing to do. So put that mulch around them as wide an area as you can, and it really will make a difference of a few degrees in temperature, and, you know, maybe 2 or 3 degrees in temperature, and that could be enough to keep those blueberries from firing off too soon. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I would do that. Anything else is kind of hard. I mean, it's just, you can't, you know, as I say, it's easy to deal with too much cold. It's easy. I can give you 50, but it's hard to deal with too much heat. Just hard to deal with it. I guess you could shade the blueberries, but that creates its own set of problems because you're actually be holding in the ground heat most likely if you do. So what we really want to do is mulch the roots. Mulch those roots really good. And don't just not, I'm talking about a little pile right around the stem. I'm talking about mulch so that the mulch sits out about 3 feet on all sides around those blueberries, and that will help to keep them cooler.
Good idea.
All right, John.
I appreciate it.
Tell
that.
Me how they do. Hey, let's report back in next week. I think this is going to shut them down. I think last week and this week is going to help shut them down. But you keep me posted. Tell me how they're doing. Because it's worrisome seeing those blooms this soon. You still got a lot of blooms left, but we want to keep them shut down until late February and early March.
All right.
All right, John. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Yeah. Lawrence, dadgummit. I'd love to talk to you about your pear trees. You give me a call back. Give me a call back and we'll figure it out. Oh, good. I got a question about broom sedge. This is going to be fun. Got to be fun. Nothing I'd rather be talking about. We're going to have to go to break here, but we're going to be back. Give us a call.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right. I'm ready. Let's get back to it. You know, here's a funny thing. I'm going to every 15 minutes I'm going to remind you of this. And I know I'm going to need to remind you of this because nobody's called to me to brag about how they've already started their tomatoes. They've already started their peppers. That ain't a good sign. that ain't a good sign. Look, I hadn't started my peppers yet. I hadn't started my tomatoes. But that ain't no excuse. It's time to do it. We got to do it. We got to get them ready. And you call me. We'll talk about why. But it's important. So every 15 minutes, you're going to get this reminder because it's that time of year. I hope, my goodness, I hope you have your peas ready to go. You're going to get this every 15 minutes, too. You got to plant your sugar snaps now. You got to plant your English peas now. You got to plant, what do they call them things? Snow peas. You got to plant your fava beans. You can't wait. You cannot wait. You got to do it. You got to do it real soon. And I mean like soon, meaning yesterday. But get it done before next weekend, folks. Get it done. It needs to be done if you're going to get this, if you're going to get this show on the road for this coming year. Just a reminder. Just a reminder. Lawrence was going to ask me about pear trees. He had to get back to work. I respect that, Lawrence. We all got work to do, and that's a good thing. Listen, pears. So a very broad question. Why isn't my pear bearing? It's 10 years old. Well, a couple of things to recognize with pears. One is they are slow as Christmas to bear. They have to kind of go through adolescence. And that could be part of the problem here. Could be part. It can often, with some pear varieties, it can be between 7 and 10 years before they really start bearing. But at 10 years, you should expect something. So I'm going to assume that the problem isn't just age, that the problem, there may be an additional problem. Could be as simple as shade, could be other factors. But let me, Lawrence, you're going to have to tell me. What kind of pear is it? Because Bartlett pears, for example, which are, you know, they're grocery store pears, and we kind of buy things based on what we see in the grocery store. Bartlett pears don't grow well on the Gulf Coast. And in fact, remember we talked about chilling. A lot of plants need winter chilling to produce well. Pears are one. Apples are one. These are fruits from the northern hemisphere, Eurasia, that where you get a little cold temperatures, and they need chilling. Bartlett needs about 800 hours of chilling. And most years on the Gulf Coast, we don't get anywhere near 800 hours of chilling. We get mostly around, you know, a lot of folks ain't going to get 500 hours this year. Maybe not even 400 if it keeps on this way. So the problem can be that we don't get enough winter chilling for your particular pear to produce flowers and fruit. So, Lawrence, send me a message. Let me know what kind of pear you have, and we can kind of work on that. You didn't ask, but if we could talk about pear varieties. There's some good ones out there, and some good ways of thinking about pears. Really good. You know, I've been eating pears in sandwiches, the hard pears in sandwiches. They were absolutely delicious. Yeah, we should talk about that. It's really interesting what you can do with even things like kefir pear, which I thought, kefirs. But, you know, I have a new respect for kefir pears. I mean, they do well on the Gulf Coast. They're hard as a rock. They get a little softer as time goes on. You slice them thinly, and you can do wonderful things with them. They actually make great pear tarts. You know what else they make really good? Jim, are you listening? Pear pepper wine. Oh, man. And pear pepper cider. Do you think I'm smart enough to do that? No. Jim's probably smart enough to do that. My wife's smart enough to do that, and she is so proud of herself. But I'm telling you, that pear pepper wine, that pear pepper cider was delicious with kefir pears. Finding the right pear. That's a key to doing things right. David, not only did David can, look at all them cans. So it was a good year for Melaton. And it was a good year for Melaton because look at all them cans of pickled Melaton. If you've got enough Melaton to pickle, you had a good year of Melaton. David has put his Melaton to bed for the year because of the chill. It got a little cold at his house. I thought it's going to be variable. Up on those sandy hills in West Mobile, temperature can drop sometimes really precipitously. I didn't even think the dew point got that low, but apparently it dropped right slap dab to the dew point. Boom. So it's 27 degrees, he said, at his house. So he's kind of put the melt on, but he's got a ton of meltons. But not only that, but David, he hadn't bragged on it yet till I made him. He started his seeds. There you go. David Hubble started his seeds, tomatoes and peppers hadn't come up yet. If you want to know how to start those things, you give me a call. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about how to do it. But this is a great time to talk about chill hours. Let's talk about it. And Josh, yes, Josh asked the perfect question. Let me tell you about what chill hours means. Chill hours generally means the number of hours. And this is, we've kind of changed the definition over the years because we got smarter about it. But in general, I'm going to say that chill hours means the number of hours each winter between about 25 degrees and 45 degrees. And those temperatures that are between 30 and 45 are probably the most important, by the way. Doesn't have to be super cold. Just need the hours below that. And in fact, super cold temperatures probably don't register. Weird thing about how all that works. It's the timekeeping apparatus that plants have, and it makes perfect sense. If you think about it from a plant, it makes perfect sense. Until climate starts changing. And then you got some issues. Or until you take a plant out of its normal zone where it's normally grown, because then it doesn't know what to do with a Gulf Coast winter if it's used to Michigan winters, right? If it's been trained for Michigan winters, selected for Michigan winters. So that's what chill hours are. Those hours between, let's say, 25 and 45 degrees, with the temperatures between 30 and 45 being probably the most important. Arlie Powell will call me and just say, well, that isn't quite right. And Arlie knows. He's the guy. A lot of folks have been working on that in Alabama for a long time. We generally get our chill hours here along the Gulf Coast are generally between 400 and 600. In a lucky year, maybe 700 hours. It's rare on the Gulf Coast where we get 800 hours of chill or more. Now, as you move up into Alabama, if you move up to Monroe County, you move up to particularly up above Montgomery, you're going to start seeing a lot of 800 chill hours. So in Birmingham, 800 chill hours, about right. You know, 800 to 1,000, about right. In move farther north, and it's more like 1,200 chill hours is about right, 1,000 to 1,200. So it changes as you move through the state. Now, here's the question, though, Josh asked. Does it need to be continuous, or does it just accumulate, and then even if it gets warm again, no. Once it gets warm, so we probably had some chill hours early in the winter, back in November, December, where it got a little chilly, and then it just got warm as it could be. We lost all the benefits of those chill hours, gone. And in fact, it doesn't take many days of warm temperatures, 3 days, 2 or 3 days of warm temperatures, to basically undo a lot of the chilling that has occurred. So you got to have so Arlie and a lot of folks at Extension with Auburn and other places have come up with a more sophisticated way of looking at chill hours that is based on all of that loss of chilling, and we still don't have it nailed down perfectly, but yeah, it's an issue. It's something we got to think about, this winter chilling, and how we get it. And it's going to be a tricky year. It's going to be a tricky year. Auburn used to post those hours back in the day when Arlie was kind of beat everybody over the head and made them post them, and that's great. I don't know that Auburn posts them anymore for general consumption. They're probably not posted statewide, but I'm going to be looking for them again to see what's available. It's too early to make a good judgment at this point. In February and March, we'll start looking and thinking about it. But it's not been a good year. It has not been a good year for accumulating chill hours, I'll say. So we're going to see that effect unless something changes dramatically. It could. Doesn't seem likely, given that this is a La Nina year. La Nina makes things a little bit warmer along the Gulf Coast, don't you see? So we got this La Nina year. It doesn't look good for accumulating those extra chill hours this year. So, but we'll watch. January, we could get lucky. A good chill hours in January, good chill hours in February. We could have great peaches. We could have great pears, apples. Well, we never have great apples along the Gulf Coast, honestly. I got to say. But pears and peaches, we could do all right if we get the right number of chill hours. Unless you have some very low chill peaches and pears. And Lawrence, you give me a hint again, Lawrence. This all started. Lawrence, you started this by asking about your pear. That's good. I'm glad you did. But let me know what kind of pear variety you got. And let's see if that could be the problem here. And then we'll try to figure out whether we can do anything about it. We're going to be back.
Wayfaring stranger, traveling through this world alone. There is no sickness, toil, or danger in that fair land to which I go. I'm going home to see my mother. I'm going home, no more to roam. I'm just going over Jordan. I'm just going over.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah. I got it. I asked for it. I got it. Look at this. All the braggarts came out of the woodwork. And I'm glad they did. I needed them to. That's why I teased them. That's why I bear baited them into coming out of the woodwork just so they can testify to you that folks are starting their tomatoes already. So Will and Fairhope's got some beautiful looking tomatoes and peppers coming up the day after Christmas. Isn't that beautiful? That's just beautiful looking stuff. He's got them inside. He's got them under, sophisticated lights on warm days. When the days warm up, you can always put those outside. Just a reminder, get them outside when you can. I don't know that there are going to be that many days this week when you can do that. But if you get some warm days, if temperatures are above in the mid-50s and above, put them outside. Let them, and particularly if it's sunny, put them outside. It'll strengthen those stems. They'll get more light than they can get otherwise. It can be really important. So just a reminder, Will's doing great. Starting tomato. I told you, every 15 minutes I'm going to do this. Bruce got quite a collection. I'm really interested. He's growing Rignon. R-I-N-O-N, that he did. I don't know whether he got it from Experimental Farm Network or whether he got it from Seed Savers, but I grew Rignon for a couple of years now, and I really like it. I'm interested to hear how it does for you. It's been very productive, very productive. It's got a great flavor. There were several. Santiago, of course, I've bragged about for a long time. He's growing that one. It's just really good. So Rosalita, I don't know. Ace 55, I don't know. Puta Banda, I don't know. But I'm interested to hear about that. Sugar Snap's looking good. Listen, this is important. These guys are getting this stuff done. They're getting them started. And Bruce's plants look really good. He had them outside, and look how stiff and they're really good. Bruce, the only thing I'll say, man, they're going to be big plants by the time you get ready to put them in the ground. Bruce got started a little early, but that's good. That's good. It's better than not getting started early. Ah, man. My good friend David B. says, he just had a meeting with Arlie the other day. I'm glad to hear it. I miss Arlie. Arlie was always suspicious I wasn't going to get it right. And he was right to be suspicious. I miss Arlie. He was very good for us all in extension and sort of the golden era in my mind of horticulture at Auburn. When Arlie was there, particularly for things like fruits, I mean, Auburn did a ton of great stuff. I'll just leave it at that. That was the golden era. Arlie was there, did wonderful things. I miss him. His son, Jason, runs Petals of the Past, and Arlie is up there helping sometimes, up around Birmingham. So good to know about all that. Let's see what else we got here. Rusty says his granddaddy grew the best pears in Frisco City. Last man I knew had a plow mule. This is the thing about being my age. I remember in Central Alabama when I was 11th grade, that there was a man who used to come to the bank. It must have been every Monday or Tuesday morning. He'd go through the teller window with his mule and buggy. Everybody just thought it was normal. And, I just think about that every time I go to a teller window, I see a teller window, and I think, we all should go with a mule and buggy to the teller window. The world would be a better place, maybe, if we did. I tried going on my bicycle. Didn't go well. They weren't ready for that. So I don't know what they do with a mule and buggy nowadays. Interesting thing. Rusty, pears, you know, we lost a lot of great pear varieties. We lost a lot of great pear varieties, and a lot of them were grown. A lot of them didn't have names. T.O. Warren over in Hattiesburg created, to me, one of the best pear varieties for the middle part or the upper southern part of Alabama. They can be a little iffy along the Gulf Coast because they need a little more chill, but than some areas get. But even areas around Citronelle would do really well with T.O. Warren pear. T.O. Warren was over in Hattiesburg, went to his yard one day when I was much younger, had great pears. And one was called the Warren pear. Really, really great job that T.O. did on sort of capturing that pear. The Warren pear is a great one for you, particularly in the Frisco City area and Citronelle and North. Might be good along the warmer areas too, along the Gulf Coast. But kefir is, you know, look, shame on me for undervaluing kefir for a long time. Shame on me. And as Josh says, you know, we it's a hard pear. They need to be bledded in one way or another. It's an old word, which basically means you need to let them sit a while. Or you could put them in a refrigerator. They'll soften up. They'll soften up on the tree if you get enough winter cold and if they don't fall off, which they're liable to do. Kefir can be a really useful pear, and it's hard as it can be, hard as a rock when it comes on, a little grainy, but boy, it's delicious, and delicious for cooking, perfect for cooking, really nice for sandwiches. I know this sounds crazy, but let me just, give me a second. This is something my wife did. I wasn't smart enough to do this. She used to put apples in sandwiches, and they were okay. They were pretty good, particularly if you had good apples. But that was hard to find. But then she started putting those kefir pears in sandwiches. I'm talking about slice them thin, put them in a sandwich. I mean, it's unbelievably good. Really delicious. Great thing to do. Let's see what else we got here. Comment if this is a good time to trim fig and satsuma bushes. Well, here's the simple story. It is never, ever, under any circumstance, never a good time to plant to trim satsuma bushes. And particularly, no, do not, under any circumstance, do it this time of year. But no, there is no good time to prune satsuma bushes. You call me, we can talk about it. Why do you want to prune them? Don't prune a satsuma. Do not. You're going to make a mess, but particularly don't do it now. It needs every bit of foliage it can. It's not a good time to trim figs either. Figs, it's good to trim, but not now. Not now. Wait till March. Call me. Let's talk about this.
If it keeps on raining, Libby's going to break. If it keeps on raining, Levy's gonna break. And when the levy breaks, I'll have no place to stay.
It's Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
All right, little did I know we were going to end up talking so much about pears today, but I'm happy to do that. I am really happy to do that. And we got some other things on the agenda, but listen, I'm starting you're going to hear this every 15 minutes, and it's good for you to hear it every 15 minutes. Start your peppers. Start your tomatoes. You know, one of the ways, start your sugar snaps. get them in the garden. Peppers and tomatoes, they start on your windowsill. If you have any questions about how to do that, you give me a call. If you have any questions about why you should do that, you give me a call. Maybe I should just tell you why. Maybe you don't even have to ask. Listen, here's the thing. When you have the option of growing your own peppers and tomatoes, you are going to produce far more peppers and tomatoes than you ever will by putting your life and your food in the hands of Home Depot, Walmart, Lowe's, etc. I tried to mumble that, but let me just say again, if you think that somebody in some office in New Jersey who's coming up with what plants you want to grow is going to have the right tomatoes and peppers for you, you missed it. You just missed it. It ain't going to happen. It's why so many of the, I know we got a place in Alabama that is pretty well known. They grow tomatoes. They grow egg. You know why they choose the tomatoes and eggplants and peppers they grow? Mostly because of the demographics in Indiana and Illinois and Kentucky and North and Virginia. Places that, they got to make a living. They want to make a good living. And they know to make a really good living, they don't want to sell to you in Alabama. They got to deal with you a little bit, and they feel a small obligation, I'm sure. But the varieties they're growing, they really aren't the best varieties for us. So is Bruce out there doing really just a great job picking up these varieties, growing them himself, experimenting with them. I think some of them are going to do great. I think some of them aren't going to do great. But I can guarantee you, that Bruce is going to produce a ton of tomatoes because of that. And, so Tim is saying after a $175 grocery bill with no meat, he's going to be planting a garden this year. And, it makes sense. You can spend more sometimes on getting a garden started than you can at the grocery store. But you're going to get better at it, and you're going to find, gosh, this is really a great way to do it. And the food is good. And the fact of the matter is, you just want to eat it. You just want to eat it. I go to the grocery store, and I think, what am I going to buy here? I bought some buttermilk. I don't make my own buttermilk. I buy pasta. I probably should make, but I don't make my own pasta. Bought some pasta. I bought some buttermilk. I got some butter. It's a thing I do, butter. You got to buy salt occasionally. You got to buy peppers. I like black pepper. But I don't buy peppers off the shelf because they're... short of disgusting. I rarely buy... It's really, really... makes a difference when you grow your own stuff. Peppers and tomatoes, time to start them now. Too early for eggplants. Don't worry about your eggplants. Peppers and tomatoes now. Sugar snaps, plant them now. I've said this over and over again. Lots of other things to plant. Now I get to talk about pears. Because who made me start talking about pears? Well, Josh did it, but we had, it was Lawrence. I was wanting to know about his pears. I still want to know what kind of pears Lawrence has. Let's talk about pears for just a minute. Because Rusty wanted to know, and what are all the, so there's something in the South we call hard pears, and there's something we called, there's this thing called hard pears, the thing called soft pears, and there's the thing called sand pears. I am not sure that there's a big difference in general between the things we call hard pears and the things we call sand pears. And the difference has been obscured over the years. And they're common names, and they can mean sort of what you want them to mean. But the emblematic, the classic hard pear is kefir. And kefir has more or less of a pear shape. It looks kind of like a pear. I mean, I'm not saying it looks like one of them Washington State grocery store pears. It certainly doesn't taste like a Washington State grocery store pear, because by the time you get the Washington State grocery store pear in your grocery store, it's like biting into mush. They're very soft. They're sometimes juicy. They sometimes have a bit of flavor to them. They probably have better flavor if grown in a real garden situation. But we don't do those pears well, not the West Coast pears, not like Bartlett's and others. We don't do them well. Those are soft pears. Kefir is a hard pear, and it is hard, but it softens up under the right conditions. We can talk about that. There's another group of pears we call sand pears. And sand pears, in general, are Asian pears. Let's call them Asian pears. And they're low chill. That means they don't need a lot of winter chilling to produce. Most of them do not have a classic pear shape. Many of them are actually quite round, almost apple in shape. Some of them have a little bit of a tapering at one end, but mostly they're kind of roundish. They are, the term is gritty. I don't find them gritty, but they do have, they are cellular. It's like they have, they're like little, how do I describe that? But they have a different texture than hard pears and soft pears. And people love them. I mean, I don't know which one it was. And you find these around old houses in the South. And there's one over here in the woods, just sitting on the edge of the woods, and people been letting the deer eat them. For whatever reason, we let deer eat stuff that we ought to be eating ourselves. And I went over, and I thought, man, these are great pears. I need to do something with them. And then I thought, well, I need to ask permission. And by the time I did that, the deer had eaten them all. but they're delicious, and it was one of the sand pears. I don't know which one. I gotta look it up. Listen, if you want to know more about the different kinds of pears for the Gulf Coast, there are a couple of places to look. If you're living in the Upstate, you can go to Petals from the Past, and our good friend Arlie Powell has been grafting a lot of pears. I think Arlie's still the primary grafter there at Petals from the Past. And you can get Warren Pear and Ayers, which, I don't know about Ayers, but Warren's really good. Ayers is very different. It's supposed to be the same as Warren, not. But Warren, you can get that there. You can get some other pears there, and you can get some of those soft pears. On the Gulf Coast, if you're farther south in Alabama, you really ought to look at Just Fruits and Exotics catalog. I mean, because they have incredible pear varieties that have been growing here along the Gulf Coast for eons. Not eons, but a long time. And a lot of traditional ones and some new ones from Asia that they've been bringing in. And they're really, I think they do a really great job. Just Fruits and Exotics. You can tell them I sent you. Won't get you much. But they're really great. Check out that catalog, justfruitsandexotics.com, and look at some of those pear varieties. Sand pears, soft pears, hard pears. David, we're going to talk about that beer thing here in just a minute.
You can take all the tea in China, put it in a big brown bag for me, sail right round all the seven oceans. Drop it straight into the deep blue sea.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right. right, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Alabama Sunday morning. Give us a call, 251-343-0106. We're going with the calls, but I'm also at the beginning of every 15 minutes. I am reminding you, if you're in South Alabama, I should be careful about this. And I, by South Alabama, I mean south of Montgomery. You got to start your tomatoes and your peppers right away. Get them started, particularly important along the Gulf Coast, particularly. And Gulf Coast, I mean, well, Monroeville South. You got to get them started to get them going. I recommend that, and in fact, I'll peppers even as far north as Huntsville. And who knows? Somebody may be listening in Huntsville. You should be getting your peppers started right about now. If you're growing those peppers that I've been talking about, the ahis, and we can talk about why. The South American and Caribbean peppers, they take longer to get cranked up, and they're so productive. But you don't want to have to wait until September to start harvesting them. So get them going now. They actually grow reasonably well inside, probably better than most tomatoes do. Talk about how to do that if you need to. So we'll figure it out. Yeah. So Casey, oh boy, this is Josh's wife. There's lots of other things like that, but this question has just got me so excited. So Casey wants me to talk herbs. And she's found that growing them in the South is way different than growing them in other places. You betcha. You betcha. Listen, let's talk about herbs real quickly. And this is, it's a good time to talk about them. Permit me, if you will. We had this idea, and I don't, you know, I guess because, well, you can figure out why. We had this idea that the only herbs in the world came out of France or Italy. And so we spent much of our time trying to grow herbs from France and Italy that just don't grow very well here. And I'll be honest, thyme, T-H-Y-M-E, really nice idea. It has a nice ring to it, you know, thyme. They got songs about it. You know, it's thyme is a pain in the patootie to grow in Mobile. It hates humidity. A lot of the Mediterranean herbs hate the humidity, of southern summers. It's not the temperatures, it's the humidity. And they just melt. They hate hot nights. I guess that is a temperature thing. They also really hate hot nights. And thyme can be really hard. Now, somebody every now and then is going to get thyme through the summer. And they're going to say, I told you. Well, I'm just giving you a warning. 99% of the time, your time, it ain't going to work. There's another pun in there somewhere. But it ain't gonna happen here. It's just very hard unless you grow it over the winter. So you can grow thyme in containers starting in September through the winter, putting it outside on your porch. It'll probably do just fine into May. There it is. But listen, why do we only get to talk about thyme? Why do we only get to talk about sage? Sage does okay. Rosemary does great along the Gulf Coast. Really easy. It's all year plant. Put it outside, does great. But listen, not all herbs come from Italy. And in fact, most of the herbs that come from Italy didn't come from Italy originally. Some did. A lot of them came from the hillsides of Spain, I think, or from Turkey or from other places. But listen, let's think of all the other herbs we do really well. Ginger, we do incredibly well. The ginger you buy, we do it incredibly well. It's a wonderful herb. I use it as much as I use anything. Turmeric, we do it really well. It's really easy. It's really wonderfully easy. So don't think you're stuck growing Italian herbs. Most Italian herbs, sage, thyme, what are some of the others? I'm forgetting some. You want to grow them over the winter because they're not going to do well during the summer on the Gulf Coast. Does that help? Rosemary grows well all the time. Give me some other herbs. Send me some herbs. Give me some herb names. And let's talk about them, Casey. Let's talk about the ones you want to do, and let's talk about how to do them and when best to do them. Bill, you've been pretty patient there. Tell me what's going on. Bill. Oh, man, I lost him. Sorry, Bill. Sorry about that. Bill was asking about timing on fall tomatoes. You know, there's a lot of details there, but let me say that for most, if you're going to produce fall tomatoes along the Gulf Coast, where you're going to generally get frost mid-November, you really want them to be producing or late November or early December. Bill, you there?
Bill. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I can hear you.
Oh, well, I wanted to just preface that. I've been here a little over 2 years, and I'm just now starting to understand the timing of the seasons down here. And I got my tomatoes in. They're all germinating and coming up nicely, and they'll probably go in mid-March. And some of my neighbors, they get their tomatoes in the fall. So when would you suggest, because last year in June, end of June, they were done. Between the hot nights and the bugs, they found them. But I'd like to plant a second crop of tomatoes. So first question is, when would I start them in my seed trays? And second is, when would I put them in the ground?
Yeah. So about the time your tomatoes start looking peaked in June,
yes,
you want to start your new crop.
Okay.
That's the best time. Now, there's a couple of ways to do it, and I'll tell you, there's a couple of tricks.
Okay.
The young growth tends to escape diseases. The bugs are less important on the young growth. You're not producing tomatoes on that young growth, so you're fine. You can take cuttings from the tomatoes that you planted in spring, take them in late June. The healthiest cuttings that you can find, root those cuttings. They root pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
And boom, you got your fall tomatoes.
Oh, super. So I don't have to start them right from seed.
You don't need to start them over from seed, though you certainly can do that. Now, fall tomatoes can do really well some years. They do really well in the years when it gets dry as a bone in fall. Those are our best years for fall tomatoes. In years where it stays wet in September, or where we get hurricanes, or where it just rains all the time in September and October, fall tomatoes can be tricky. You also have to know that there are more bugs in September and October. You got to deal with those things. But in general, you can produce pretty well from mid-October through end of November.
Okay.
And things will be slower. They're going to be slower to mature. But they'll do fine. Again, for fall tomatoes, just like spring tomatoes, I would focus on smaller tomatoes, because you know that stink bugs are going to be stinkers.
Yeah.
I mean, you know they're going to be a problem, and that doesn't change in fall too much. So just get ready to lose some of the tomatoes to stinkers. And you can do that by having a tomato that produces lots of small tomatoes rather than a few big ones.
Well, I took your advice last year, and I planted Santiago's. They were phenomenally successful.
Yeah.
And a great little tomato, and even some Atkinson's and some Creoles and Louisiana Pinks. And I'm expanding this year, but I use that Tomato Fest, and I just look up hot and humid climates, and they got tomatoes for us. And you're right. They tend to be indeterminate, small tomatoes. And
yeah,
that was good advice.
Yeah, Santiago's have been done great. They produce for just forever. I have had Santiago's produced during July in Mobile, and that's impressive. And then they pick up again without dying. They're very good. Hey, Bill, thanks for reviewing this.
Thank you.
Hey, we're going to be back to we're going to be back to Herb. As soon as we get back.
And the chances are good. All the vegetable will respond to you.
Some people don't go for prunes. I don't know. I've always found that if they...
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. Boy, lots of things I could talk about. Look at that beautiful eggplant lasagna, eggplant parmesan, made with eggplants out of the garden. You know, there is something really good. If all you've had is a meaty lasagna, you have no idea how good eggplant lasagna, eggplant parmesan can be. It's just it's a lot of cheese. There's no question. Cheese is big in eggplant parmesan and eggplant lasagna. But I mean, just as, you know, we like to say substitute for meat. Meat is a poor substitute for eggplant and lasagna and parmesan. That's just the way it is. I mean, hamburger meat, please. Compared to eggplant, unbelievable. Incredibly delicious. Wonderful thing. How can I talk about herbs? Let me count the ways. Casey, I hope you're still listening. Let's go back to the herbs again. Rosemary, we do it great all the time. Just give it well-drained soil. Lavender, we do poorly. I just got to say, we do it poorly. We can talk about the lavenders that'll kind of do well here. I would generally grow them in pot. I wouldn't try to grow them in the ground, but they hate our summer. Thyme. Hate summers. I'm going to get this the bad stuff first. Sage. Yeah, it's really hard to keep sage alive during the summer. Now, somebody called me the other day and said, I did it. And they do it by bringing it inside during the day. But that's kind of the wrong thing. Bring it inside at night. It's the night temperatures that they can't stand. It's that high humidity at night. They actually do quite well during the day. But grow sage in pots. On the Gulf Coast, just grow it in pots. There it is. Basil. Basil is not Italian. It's Asian. It's a classic Asian herb. It is actually from the tropical areas of Asia. Marco Polo must have brought it to, I guess, probably brought it to Italy or something like that. We could make up a story like that, and it seems reasonable. Basil became an Italian herb, but it is basically a tropical herb, and it does incredibly well for us. It does incredibly well for us all summer long. It's one of our great herbs, basil. Now, we've got a new disease for basil, which means that you need to shop for particular varieties of basil. You need to be careful about varieties of basil to make sure that they are resistant to basil, powdery mildew, or is it downy mildew? Whichever. It's got one of those mildew things. And we want varieties that are resistant to that, Antifusarium, which is somewhat of a problem. So we can talk about varieties when you're ready for the basil. Let's talk about that. You give me a call. So there's basil. Does great. Parsley does great for us. But it's definitely a winter herb. It is not a summer herb. It is a winter herb. It is great all winter long. When the basil stops, the parsley starts in my garden. That's the way I think about it. So all that basil I've been using, like every week I'm addicted. I got to have basil pesto or basil something big. It becomes parsley in winter, and it's parsley is the big season in winter. Winter is the big season for parsley, and I am eating it every chance I get. Boy, there's so many great ways to do parsley. It's a great winter vegetable, incredibly hardy. You will never have problems with hardiness for parsley on the Gulf Coast during winter. You start it in late summer to grow it during the winter. Cilantro, not actually, we think of it as a Mexican herb. It is not. It is another Asian herb. It's a little finicky because it really is a winter. It's a winter vegetable. If the days are getting longer, cilantro is going to go to seed on you. That's why cilantro is really good planted in August, September. You can grow it into December and January. It does really well. Not going to go to seed as readily. But if you plant cilantro in spring, it's going to go to seed like that. Boom. Temperature, day length, going to make it go to seed. So there's one way to think about cilantro. Wow, what else have we got? Jim in Georgetown is giving me a big thumbs up on turmeric. Really good, easy to harvest, very useful for lots of reasons. Sean has got great looking tomatoes, really good to see. So here we go. Casey's coming back with me. Tarragon. Dill is quick. You can grow it most of the year. I think it's going to do better in spring and fall than in summer. It doesn't do as well in summer, but it's okay. Calendulas, definitely a winter crop. Definitely a winter crop here. Calendulas do great during winter. It is not a summer crop. You writing all this down, Casey? You got it all? Oh, and thank you for reminding me of oregano. Oregano can survive. It probably would do better in a container. I've had oregano survive for years in my garden in Mobile. And there are a lot of different kinds of oregano. At any rate, I don't know which one is going to do the best, honestly. But there are a lot of them out there, and they're really fun to play with. I find they do really well, but I grow them in pots. I do not try to grow them in the ground. I think they would, they get dirty on the ground anyway. You know, they're kind of lean over kind of plants. I don't know what's going on with your basil. We'll have to figure that out, but I wouldn't give up on it. I think most years basil doesn't get eaten that much. I got to figure out why yours is getting eaten. We'll have to figure that one out. It generally isn't eaten a lot by a lot of bugs. I never had a problem with it getting eaten. We did have a problem with powdery mildew, downy mildew, and maybe that's what you saw. It might look like it was. It might have looked like it was getting eaten. But I think it's the mildew issue that actually gives it little black areas that look like it might have been eaten. I'm guessing that's what happened. Listen, and Thai basil is less susceptible to that. So if you want a classic basil, use some of the Rutgers varieties of classic basils. They have done very well for me. They're excellent. They don't go to seed very well, which is an important thing. So I'm going to ask you to look for seeds for a basil called Obsession. It's just done really, really well for me. I'll look up the other varieties. There's one called Prospera, I think, that has done really well, too. But look for those seeds. Look for those basils, and they should do really well for you. I'm guessing that's the thing. Calendula, I'm so glad you want to grow calendulas. I never figured out what to do with the calendula flowers, honestly. But they're pretty, and they grow well over winter. You start them in September, early September, late August, early September, and get them growing, and then they'll start blooming during December. You'll have them all winter long. Chamomile, I've never grown. I have a feeling it's going to be a funky thing. But, you know, there's a lot of other cool things. And then, listen, I want to talk about We'll talk about some of the other herbs that we forget about, like our native herbs. And we got a lot of them. We got these beautiful native mints like pycnanthemum. Some of them are incredibly delicious. They're really good. What else am I using out of the native stuff? There's tarragon. You wanted me to talk about tarragon, so let's talk about that. There are a lot of plants that are used for that tarragon-like flavor. One of them includes the what we call Mexican tarragon, which is actually an aster. That does very well. There are a lot of other plants, and I'll be thinking about them, but there's some great... Oh, you're not going to be able to find it. But I need to figure out how to get some of these great plants that have tarragon flavor that are native into gardens. That would be a lot of fun. But there's a number of plants that could work for tarragon. I'll be thinking about how you deal with that. And then for things like cilantro, we think of that. We use cilantro in our Mexican dishes. It's kind of unfortunate that we've forgotten what the traditional Mexican herbs were, because there's some really incredible ones. One of them is porphyllum. Let me see if I can find the common name. What's the common name now? Porphyllum ruderale is being sold as papalo, of course. P-A-P-A-L-O. Look, let me give you that name, papalo, P-A-P-A-L-O. And there are several relatives of papalo. You know, there are people who hate cilantro. There are people who hate papalo. I got to say, that's the way it is. But papalo is one of my favorite summer herbs. You can smell it across the yard when the rain falls on it. It is the most wonderful thing. I love papalo. Incredible, incredible herb. Incredible thing. So look up papalo. Great, great another herb for us to use. Here's a Spanish name, Herba Porosa. And I understand why Porosa is part of that name. Fennel. So here's a request. You know, this herb thing starts. So fennel, lots of fennel grows really well. Bronze fennel grows incredibly well. Green fennel grows incredibly well. I've even grown bulbing fennel and used both the leaves and the bulb. They're great. Bulbing fennel probably better over winter, but a lot of the other fennels that don't bulb, you can grow them all year long. They're really easy. They do really, really well. And maybe that'll get you over your tarragon thing, you know? Maybe that's enough, too. What have I got? Oh, I'm going to go through. This is a lot of herbs, and then I got a break. But as soon as we come back from the break, we'll talk about the rest of it. Give me a call. You ain't got much time. 251-343-0106. Episode of Yeah, I'll Talk About It.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Through the window, by the window, that's where I'll be. Come tiptoe through the tulips with me.
Please, let's get to business here. Basil, something eating basil. So a couple of people suggested that there was something eating basil. I need to see those pictures. I have had a problem, a very minor problem, with some types of beetles eating basil leaves. And I think mostly it's Japanese beetles, and I think it's mostly in the northern part of the state. It was only minor, and I'm curious to see what happened to those basils. I'm curious to see the pictures of those. I'll have to help. I will check around to see, because it's not working for me right now. Epizode. Yeah, so I love Epizode. It does grow wild. A couple of leaves in a pot of beans is great. It is, as everyone who's grown Epizode knows, it's a tiger. It'll spread around your yard pretty good. I don't mind it too much. It's pretty easy to pull up, but it's a tiger. It spreads around. I love the flavor of Epizode. It's like I'm getting a big chime in. There's Jim in Georgetown saying, "Don't forget Epizode." I love Epizode. It is one of those great Mexican herbs. It's related to some of my other favorite plants like Cynopodium, like goosefoot, and to quinoa. It's all in there. It's a beet family relative. Really, really wonderful thing. But you talk about, man, it's got an incredible odor. But in beans, I love Epizode. Epizode, really wonderful thing. So lots of great herbs. I'm not saying we can grow every herb in the world well. We can't. Thyme, we got a real problem with. But, you know, people who can grow thyme in England, they can't grow ginger worth toot. They can't grow turmeric because it doesn't get warm enough there. So there's compensation. As Ralph Waldo Emerson used to say. Looks like a water oak acorn, but not water oak in Lowndes County. I can't tell enough about that tree, but I'm going to say it looks more laurel oakish. Looks more like a laurel oak. I'll have to look carefully, and I'll look it up. But I will try to respond to that. In Lowndes County, I assume is what we were trying to say there, and it didn't. Somebody said they had snails eat their basil, and I think that's possible. That's certainly possible. Where can you buy edible ginger? Boy, this is a thousand questions at once. It's sometimes grocery store ginger will work. Sometimes they treat it to keep it from sprouting, so it doesn't work. I'll have to look up some places, but there are a lot of places that do sell ginger over the internet, and you'll have to buy roots, not seeds. You'll buy roots. It's sort of like planting potatoes. You do the roots. Tara, we're stretched here at the end, but let's talk a little bit more about herbs.
I'm loving this, making copious notes, but I'm going to try to be fast because I know there are lots of other people doing the same thing. We want to hear what you have to say, sir. The basil thing, it also might be rodents. For some reason, they totally love basil and basil family stuff like coleus, which I started from seed last year, and so far I've been able to make it come on and keep on going on, which because I just love it. I just love to look at it. I know you can eat it, but it doesn't taste like regular basil, but it's a nice plant. The wild onions, that's my question. Okay, balloon flower, platycodon, the Chinese medicine plant is one that I would recommend to anybody who hasn't tried it. But it may be a thug, too, which is fine with me because I prefer to go out there with a machete and chop it down rather than have to go out there and water it with a teaspoon, okay? The wild onions thing is where I have a question. I grow it from bulblets that I put in a pot, and I have grown them very very successfully now for 3 years. I planted them very, very closely so that they make chive-like rather than onion-like type things. But I'd heard or read somewhere that there might be a problem with the what they're calling the wild onions. Maybe it's a different onion. Having a deleterious effect on regular onions. But I don't think we grow regular onions here all that well anyway, do we?
So, Tara, this is 30 minutes of questions. So here it is. Yes, we can grow regular onions here. It does require more effort. The ones out of the lawn are just fine. They can promote diseases that can affect fancy onions more than lawn onions. And so that's something to think about. There are ways around that, but boy, we probably won't have time to get into all of that on this talk. But I love the lawn onions. They're really great. They're really good. What else did I get? Where am I?
Basil might be rodents.
Basil and the rats.
Now that's is great. All of the plant edible, right? Another Asian.
I have never been real successful with platycodin, but that's interesting.
Really?
No, farther
okay,
north.
I'll get my machete out, man. I'll share, okay?
Farther north, they may do better. But that's interesting. I'll have to talk to you more about that. You should call me when we have time.
Okay.
Good. So break those down into one question at a time and call me back. Let's talk about each of them. Let me answer a few more questions here real quickly before we run out of time.
Thank you. Appreciate your help.
All right. Tim. Yeah, you're right. You're right on several points there. Tim plants his tomatoes really early in mid-February, which is a great thing to do. That's fine. And you just got to cover them. And I think there's some benefit in that. Sean asked me, what's the best place to buy tomatoes? Yeah, so that's a hard question. I'm getting some of my tomatoes from Experimental Farm Network. Experimental Farm Network. Some of my favorite ones come from Experimental Farm Network. They got some great ones. There's one called Santiago. Where am I getting that one? I think I'm getting that one from the West Coast tomato place called what's the name of that place? But Totally Tomatoes has got some great ones too. There's a bunch of places to buy tomatoes. How do you know which tomatoes to buy? You know, we should have that discussion next week. We've still got a little bit of time to order the seeds and get them started. So you call me back. Somebody remind me to do that next week. We'll certainly talk about which tomatoes I've had great success with. And I'll have a list of all of those. Tomato Fest, that's the California place. I think that's where I'm getting my Santiago's from. There's a bunch of places to buy tomatoes. None of those places will every tomato work for you. You have to pick and choose, but we'll talk about that. And then we got a great, thank you, CB. We got a great piece of music to go out with. We'll be back next week.
On your bended knee, thank God. I dig no more taters. I declare I ain't gonna pick no peas. Because everything's on the phone.